Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to our Money Matters seminar here at Acacia Ridge Presbyterian Church. A very warm welcome to you. My name is Matt, and I'll be the MC for tonight. We have four lovely guests with us this evening who are going to be hopefully helping you and giving you a bit of insight into money, and hopefully it will be a very informative evening. A few housekeeping rules, please. Keep your mobiles turned off or at least on silent. No updating Facebook throughout the evening.
Twitter
is okay, yes. If you do need to use the amenities, they are out the back, and when you get to the steps, just turn to your right. There's ladies and then gents. Also, there is a cry room out the back there if you if there are any children who need a bit of quiet. There is a room out the back there that has a speaker and you can still see us from the front here, so feel free to use that if you wish. There is tea and coffee and some nibbles at the back if you are getting peckish throughout the evening. Let's get into it. This is what's happening throughout the evening. We will be looking at creating your own budget, getting more in your trolley for less, the real cost of mobile phones, and Stuart has assured me that if you have an iPhone, it's very bad. It's a very, very big cost. Helping our community, getting finances right, and at the end there'll also be a question and answer panel. As you came in, you should have received a bit of a welcome pack. There is some information there about tonight, about our church. There's also a notepad for you to write some notes. If you do have any questions throughout the evening, write them down, and then at the end that we're going to have all the four speakers come up and we can do like a question and answer. And answer all those questions then. I'm going to introduce to you the four speakers. First of all, Christine. Why don't you come up and we'll introduce Christine. Christine is a mother of four great kids and wife to Dan, who is our senior pastor here at Acacia Ridge Presbyterian Church. She has had over 25 years experience in sticking to the budget, shopping for specials. 7 of those years was while Dan was on a student minister's budget, and can I assure you that that is very small. I have experienced it. It's not much at all, and so managing a family of four on that is a great experience. 15 years of those, she was the main financial director of the family, I guess you could call it. Before children, Christine was a pharmacologist at UQ. She had a Bachelor of Science, including honours, and a PhD. She's a very, very smart woman here. So, that's Christine. Thank you. We have Darren. Darren, you want to come up? We'll introduce Darren. Darren here is from St. George Bank. Married to, is it Fiona. Fiona. For 20 years, they have two champion teenage boys, Caleb and Josiah. As I said, bank manager at St. George at Callanvale, board member and treasurer at Hope Christian Assembly, a business owner and property investor. So, welcome, Darren. Thank you. And Vincent as well. Do you want to come on up, Vincent? Vincent is married to Fanny Ross with three daughters and one son. Over 28 years in finance industry, including overseas at, and in Australia as broker, banker and in insurance. Studies in Australia including financial planning and an MBA, Graduate School of Management. Previously was the treasurer at Bethany International Church and awarded St. George Bank Queensland Lender of the Year for 2010. I understand he's a world of knowledge, so thank you, Vincent. And finally, we have Stuart. Come on up, Stuart. Father, father of two great kids and husband of his first wife. has over 20 years in financial and business management experience. Director of business consulting and accounting firm called Brisbane Financial Controllers. Used to work for David Jones, Toyota, and a number of other small businesses, and has a Bachelor of Commerce, Graduate Diploma of Applied Finance, and a CPA. What is a CPA?
Certified Practicing
Accountant. There you go. I learned something today already. Thank you, Stuart.
Thanks.
Matt. Folks, as Matt mentioned, I am a CPA, and that means I take a lot of care, but no responsibility. So this is our lot of care, no responsibility statement. Right? What it really is it's actually a statement that you need to read, because tonight is about a general information session. It's not about specific legal or accounting advice, financial advice to yourselves, because we haven't taken into account your own individual circumstances. Right? Having said that, hopefully you get a lot of information, and we have got a lot of information to throw at you. Folks, we're really here to find out about a budget, and the biggest question is, what is a budget? And so at great expense, I went on the net and downloaded a video for you to actually see what a budget really is. Folks, with university students, having 80% of them having a credit card, and 50% having four or more, you can see why debt is out of control. And it's not just in the States, it's in Australia as well. So in order to control that debt, you need a budget. So the question is, what is a budget? Well, a budget is really just a plan. A plan of how you're going to get your money coming in, or your income, and how and where you're going to spend it. That's all a budget is. It's pretty simple. But as was highlighted in the video, it's not setting the budget that counts. It's actually sticking to it. And that's the hardest thing. The other thing is, when you do a budget, it's your budget. So unless you're going to see Darren to get a loan, it's actually your budget. So if you're like my first wife and you buy $10 worth of chocolate every week, don't put in your budget that you're going to spend $10 worth of chocolate every 6 months. All right? Don't do it. She tried it, it didn't work. Right? So really, don't lie in your budget. Be realistic, be very methodical, right? Because if you do cheat in your budget, you're cheating on yourself. That's quite simple. So who should do a budget? Well, the first group of people that do a budget is actually the government. In the beginning of May, the government sets out the federal budget. And that's when we find out where our taxes are going to go up by and what extra fees we're going to get. And then the state government does it, and then the council does it, and that's when we really find out what their rates are going to go up by. Right? The next group of people are businesses that do a budget. Every fiscally managed business will actually do a budget. And executives will actually get judged on meeting that budget. And if they do meet the budget, they often get a bonus. But your task, right, if you're willing to accept it, is that if you set your budget and you meet it, you'll actually get that bonus, holiday, or whatever you're saving for. Right? So that's your task. Next thing is churches do a budget. Our church does a budget at the beginning of the year. It gets given to the congregation, and they approve it. Well, hopefully they approve it. The other thing is for those of you that know us at our church, we're actually going for a second worker. We had to prepare a budget, submit it to head office to make sure that they agreed that we could actually afford a second worker before we were actually permitted to go out and advertise for a second worker. And then young adults, right? So people getting their job, going out to get a car, hoping to get a car. They start saving. They should be setting themselves a budget to make sure that, number one, they can pay for the car, number two, that they can pay for the insurance, the maintenance, and the petrol. Right? Then as they get a bit older and they get into the adult stage and start looking for a house, do a budget to find out and make sure that you can actually afford the house repayments, the insurance and maintenance and rates. Then when you start thinking about having kids and family, once again, make sure you've got a budget so you can afford to have the kids. If you can't afford it, don't have kids. Simple. See how easy it is to do a budget? The next thing is people who are ready to retire or are in retirement. Right? Sit down, work out how much income you're going to have coming in, and then what your expenses are, because all of a sudden you're getting a weekly wage, you're not going to get that anymore. You need to start budgeting. So really, folks, everybody needs to do a budget. That's the answer. Right? So why do you do a budget? Well, it's not, as I said before, it's not actually doing the budget that counts, it's sticking to it. Right? The real reason why you actually do a budget is to determine or support your lifestyle you want. So if you want to go out on nightclubbing every Friday night, do a budget, make sure you can afford it. If you can't afford it, go out every second Friday night. It's pretty simple. The other reason why you do a budget is actually if you want to buy something or you're saving up for a holiday. Right? That's another great reason to do a budget. You should be doing it anyway. And the biggest thing is actually to reduce your debt or to increase your savings. Right? Now, debt is not a bad thing, I have to tell you. Debt's not a bad thing. The size of debt can be a bad thing and the ability to service the debt can be a bad thing. 99.9% of Australians couldn't have the Australian dream of owning their own home without debt. It's a fact. We all have home loans. It's debt. You know, the thing is to manage and be able to service that debt. That's why you're doing a budget. So when do you do a budget? Has anybody here got a budget? Yeah? Good. Good. Well, those that haven't got a budget, go and do it now. Right now. Well, not right now. Finish this. Maybe set yourself a target that by the 1st of November you'll actually have a budget structured out. It's not that hard to do. If you do have a budget, have a look and review it. As lifestyles change, your budget has to change. So that's the biggest thing, is to review it. A budget shouldn't just be a static thing that sits there, great, I've done it. It's not like a will. I've done it. I'm saying I have more kids I need to get. It's not like that. A budget should be a live thing. And review it and adjust it and try to keep to it. It's pretty simple. Right? So I suppose the biggest question is, how do you do a budget? In my line of work, where I consult to a lot of to businesses, the biggest thing that we talk about is cash flow. And that's really what a budget is. And I'll often go into a business and I'll say, just have a look at your cash flow. And you get this blank look. I knew you were going to ask me for it. Well, can I have a look at it? I haven't got it. And you ask, why not? I haven't got a program to do it. So what I do, I say to them, got this piece of paper? Sorry, folks. Got one of these. It's called a pen. Right. Budget. Right. Or cash flow. And that's what we do. Opening what each weekend, what my bank account balance is, my money coming in, all my money going out. If more goes out than comes in, my bank balance goes down. Right? Just find out what bank balance is, comes up. If more comes in than goes out, my bank balance goes up. The thing is, I want to make sure that my bank balance reaches the point that I want it to be, so I adjust my spending. Quite often I can't adjust my income, right? But adjust your spending, right? And the timing of your spending as well. But that's pretty easy. If you've got a computer, it makes it a lot easier to do a budget, a real lot easier to do a budget. And down the back of the hall, there's actually some of these things. The discs, it's actually got a budgeting program on it. Right? It's in Excel, very simple. And here's one we've actually prepared beforehand, because I've been watching Ready Steady Cook. So this is actually what you'll get on here. Right? It's in 2007 Excel and also 2003 Excel. Okay. So this is simply, there's our another all care no responsibility statement. All right. The first thing to do when you do a budget is you have to put information into it. So what we do is we actually click over here on input information and there's a budget. So we have to tell it when we want to start the budget. We tell it what our current bank balance is. Then we look at all the income, say all the money we're getting in. And we have to tell it, give it a time frame. So if we're going to get paid weekly, we'd click on here and select weekly. Okay? If we want fortnightly, we select fortnightly. And monthly, quarterly, and 6-monthly. Right. If you choose anything other than a weekly, you have to tell the program when the first occurrence is going to happen. So the first time you're going to get paid, or the first time you're going to pay the bill. Okay? So, and what will happen is that if you select weekly, it simply comes up with an amount. If you select fortnightly or above, it asks you from when. Okay, and you just put in the date. Okay, so that's how you actually create the budget. Right. With this budget template, if we've given you additional income areas, right, if this doesn't fit, it'll suit you. To change it, you just type in a new income in this case, and it's friends loans. Okay, and we get a friends loan every fortnight or whatever the case may be, weekly. So, okay. Once you do all your income coming in, then you do all your expenses going out, and then all your bills, etc., etc. Write down kids' fees. I'll just make a quick note on this credit cards. This is not what you're going to be spending on your credit card. Right? It's actually what you're going to be paying off your credit card to get the bill down, the balance down to nil. Because if you have an electricity account and you put it on your credit card, you actually put it up against the electricity. Right? Does it make sense? Yep. Right? So this is actually just to reduce your credit card balance. And there's a little hint here. The BrisVin says only put in payments you need to clear your current balance. Right? We've got little things down here, coffee, lunches and things like that. Right? So you have to have some fun things in a budget as well. This budget was actually created for somebody earning $52,000 a year. Why is it $52,000? Because simpletons like me know that $52,000 means that they get $1,000 a week. That's why. See? So in this particular case, the person gets paid fortnightly. All right. And the next pay is on the 13th of October. Okay. Now, you'll say to me, well, why have you got $1,628 there rather than $2,000? Because simpletons have to pay tax as well. All right. So they actually get, that's actually the take-home pay. All right. Once you're happy and you've got all your income and expenses in there, you simply click this button, and that's a weekly budget for you. Person starts off at $923, right? They get $8 out of the couch because their mates come over for the footy. Right? They get $58 a week friends loans, $150 worth of groceries, go down, and $15 for coffee. Right? So they actually spend $165 and they've now got $824 in the bank account at the end of the week. In this particular person's case, you'll see that they go into overdraft or in the red. That means that their income was enough to support their expenses. Right. So, in this particular case, they actually have a bank loan with St. George, and you'll see the bank loan comes out before the next pay happens, $868. So, what this person has to do is give Darren at St. George a call and say, Darren, I've got a problem. I'm going into overdraft and I haven't got an overdraft account. What can we do about this payment here? I've got a real problem. But it's only short term, Darren. I've done my budget. I can prove to you that it's only short term, Darren, because afterwards I come clean. I'm pretty good. I've got money right through. So Darren would then organise, would say, come in, simpleton, and we need to discuss things and just work something out. They might stay that payment or whatever. Right? And that's the same with any loans or any issues you have. Right? If you can't afford to pay for them, and everybody here should have lodged their tax returns by now, lodge it even if you owe the tax man money. Right? Because if you do, if you don't lodge it, you get fees, you get penalties and interest. If you can't afford to pay them and you get your notice of assessment saying you owe us, give them a call. There's actually people on the end. They're reasonably, well, no, they're not very nice. But no, they are nice. Wayne's not here, is he? No. Tax office people are very nice, and they'll actually try to work out a plan with you. All right. And it usually goes, how much can you afford to pay? Oh, $50 a week? No, that's actually a year. But and also any financier, just speak to the people beforehand. All right. Don't try to hide, because it comes back and gets you really quickly. If you want to look at your budget on a fortnightly basis, is a fortnightly basis, and then on a monthly basis as well. Right? And that's how you create a budget. If you don't get the results that you want, so your income, your bank balance isn't what you wanted, right? You then have to go back and adjust your expenses, and that's the trick to it all. Right? The other thing in here is that we actually have a savings section. So this person wants to save, regular saving, fortnightly, so he wants to save $13. All right. Okay, this regular saving is part of your budget as well. All right. So that's how you actually create a budget. And as I said, there's free discs, and if you haven't got a computer, there's hard copies down there as well. Once you've got your budget, as I said before, the idea is to stick to it. And that's the hard bit. But the best bit is that if you can save money, it helps you to stick to it. And we've got one of the greatest people here to tell you how to stick to or how to save money in Christine. So I'll hand over to Christine now.
Excuse me. Okay, so now if you go home and put into action your budget planning from what Stuart has just told you, you've now got an amount of money set aside for food each week, amount for clothes or presents or whatever through the year. So how do you keep within that limit? Well, my topic was how to get more in your trolley for less dollars. Now most of what I'm going to say is going to refer to shopping for groceries, because we all like to eat. Right? And probably the item we buy most of and most often is food. So just for background, I shop for 6, 2 adults, 3 boys, 13, 11 and almost 9, he likes to call himself 9, 1 girl, 5. And my budget for the week for groceries is $200, which has to cover food, paper goods, cleaning stuff, toiletries. And I'm sure some of you are on tougher budgets than that, and some are probably thinking we spend way more than that. So let's first take a look at the sorts of things we buy. So I've divided them into two columns. The first column is the stuff that can be stored, things like tinned food, dried food, packet, paper items, cleaning stuff. This is the column where I generally try to avoid paying the full price. The second column is your perishable goods, dairy items, fruit and veggies, fresh bakery stuff. These are items you need to buy weekly or even a couple of times a week. And meat, if you have freezer space, you may be able to store more of that. So that probably floats between the two. Now the second column is where you need to look for the best deals if you're going to save money, because you can't store up large amounts. Right. So if you're going to save money when you shop, it's really important to get prepared before you go. So step one, make a list. Why write a list? Because if you go knowing what it is that you actually need to buy, hopefully that is all you will buy. It's like your budget. You need to stick with it. If you want to meet the goals you've set, well, when you go shopping, stick to the list. Now there's a couple of things you can do that will help you write a list. One of those is maybe to write a menu for the week. Then you write on your list the specific things you need to buy to make those meals. I have to say that I don't actually do that specifically. I have a fairly set range of main course meals I cook regularly, and I basically keep the ingredients for those things on hand all the time. That way the meals for the week are based on what meat was on special or meat that I already have in the freezer. The other thing to do is to look in the pantry and see what it is that you need to replace. So, for example, if the coffee's only got this much in it, have you got a spare tin there ready to go? And I keep a paper and pen in the kitchen and write down things that I notice we're low on as the week goes on. Okay, you can also make a list and print out a basic list, something like this maybe, that can remind you of what things to check on before you go shopping. You could tick them off, the things you need, cross out the ones that you don't need this week. Okay. Now the second thing you can do, the second point I've got here, is to read the specials before you go. I like my grocery junk mail. If you don't get the junk mail, you can look, they usually have the catalogues online and you can look through the specials on there. Now, remember how I said we don't pay full price for the stuff in the first column? This is where your specials come in. So, the non-perishable things that you buy regularly, try to buy them only when they're on special. And the other thing you can do is buy enough in bulk to get you through to the next time they're on special. So if you buy and stock up when things are on special, you won't run out and you won't ever pay full price for them. Okay. Now, I put shop around to a limited extent. If you have several grocery stores in the same centre, that's fantastic. You know, utilise most of the specials from each of those shops, but it's not cost effective if you have to drive a long way to save just a few dollars, and it takes up valuable time. So I often find the shops are competitive too, so if one shop's got something on special one week, often the one I shop at has the same special the following week. Okay. And I do tend on my grocery list to write a little note in the bottom if some other shop has a good special. And sometimes the specials aren't all in the ads, and you'll get there and find, oh, my shop's actually got that same special this week anyway, and that saves you another trip. Okay, so now we head off to the shops. You've got your list, you know what you want. So now when you get to the shop, it's very helpful to know the prices. So you could even keep a notebook with the standard prices of things you normally buy, if you want. This allows you to know if something is actually on a good special. If you're only saving 6 cents off $3, then that's not much of a special. But if you're saving a dollar, $3 down to $2, that's fairly significant. It also means if you try an alternative shop, you can tell if the prices are more or less than what you're used to paying and whether it would be worth changing over. But the big place to know your prices is your perishable, the stuff in that perishable column. So in the fruit and veggie section, that's where I have a sort of a capped price in my head. Okay, so if bananas are more than $3, well, we don't buy bananas that week. So you need to have an idea of what things cost so you can tell whether or not that's a good deal or not. Another example is green beans. You know, they're fairly light, so for so even if they're $7 a kilo, I can still get enough for about four meals for a few dollars. So that's not too bad. Okay, I do look out if there's produce that's reduced to clear, because often, so long as you're going to be using it fairly quickly, that you can get some good bargains that way too. I use the same principle when I shop for meat. I aim for about $8 an evening meal at the moment, although my boys are growing fast. So I will go through and look if there's any meat reduced, because so long as I'm taking it straight home, putting it in the freezer, it's fine. I look for the cheaper cuts of chicken. Sometimes you might have a recipe that calls for a fancy cut, but often the cheaper ones will work just as well. We actually buy rump or blade beef roast, that sort of thing, and we actually grind our own meat. So you know, you can sometimes get that sort of beef down to $6 or $7 a kilo. whole chook can be good value. We can, out of a 2 kilo chook, you might pay $12 or $13, but we get two meals off that. And my sister-in-law makes stock or soup out of a carcass, so she gets a third. I haven't got that keen yet. Eggs are another good value meal. It takes a whole dozen for an evening meal for us now, but they're only, you know, if you buy the cheapest ones, $2.50 for a dozen at Woolies, and they're still well under the $8 mark, even if you wanted to buy the free-range, organic, fancier ones. Okay, just a point about packaging. Less packaging and processing is going to be cheaper. So, for example, yogurt. If you buy a 1 kilo tub, which I do for the kids' lunches, I just put that into a little reusable tub every day. That's going to be cheaper than buying six little individual snack pack type ones that, when you add them up, you've got the same amount of yogurt, but it's cost you $2 or $3 more. Sometimes on dairy, though, like today, I bought yogurt because it was on special in the big tubs. I just check the use-by date. If it's still going to last for 3 or 4 weeks, I bought the yogurt for 3 weeks. But so long as they don't eat it all in one go, because then that's that's the next 3 weeks yogurt. So just remember to check the use-by dates, because otherwise you spend a bit more. There's lots of prepackaged snacks you can buy for school lunches. If saving money is your aim, then I avoid all of those. And obviously, if you cook from scratch rather than use pre-prepared or pre-processed sort of food, that's going to save you money and be healthier in the long run. Point there, if you check your docket after you've shopped, you'll be able to tell which things are processed, because the stuff that's got the asterisks beside it saying you've paid GST, there's no GST on fruit, veggies, fresh meat, and things like the basic things like rice and flour and sugar. So if you've paid GST on it, you've bought something someone else has had to make for you, basically, or get you up to that step. Okay, point three, check the generic brands, Home Brand or Black and Gold, or it's called different things at different shops. The generic brand is often way cheaper than the branded version. Even some things, when the branded version's on special, it doesn't come down to that price. But you have to work out which things are okay in this range and which things aren't. For example, I don't buy Home Brand tea bags or washing powder, but rice and flour are fine. Okay, point four is to watch out for what I'll call treats. These are things you buy that aren't on your list and you wouldn't normally buy them. And a few treats are fine, especially if they're on a really good special, but if you pick up too many of them, you'll soon blow your budget. So, because remember, how doesn't matter how good the special is, if you wouldn't normally have bought it, then you've spent money out of your budget. Okay, point five. On the next one. Okay, this is about buying in bulk. So this is going back to what I mentioned earlier about making use of your specials on storable things. Now, I've divided this into two facets, basically. First, if it's something that's going to have a limited life when you open it, you want to buy the size that you're actually going to be able to use all of. So if there's only two of you, it's not worth buying the big tin of fruit and then throwing most of it away. So an example of that, recently we thought we'd try some American mustard that someone had suggested. And when we had a look, the 400 mils was about $4, 800 mils was $7. So that's, you know, double the amount, but it's not double the price. It's less than double the price. So the 800 mils is actually the better value. But we thought, we don't even know if we'll like it. So we bought the smaller jar and saved $3, and we know we won't throw away the rest of it if we don't like it. Turns out I think they actually quite like that. But so in practical terms, if it's going to have a limited life once you open it, buy bulk numbers on special of the size that suits your household. Sometimes for tin things, I know when I buy tomato soup, it is not on, the one we like is not on special very often, but they sell a 3-pack, and that is cheaper than buying 3 individual tins. So you can look out for that sort of way to save as well. The second thing about buying in bulk, though, is if it doesn't go off, it doesn't really matter how much you buy, so you may as well buy the big one if that's the best saving. So toilet paper and laundry powder are a couple of good examples here. So these are both things where I don't buy home brand, so I'm looking for the best deal that I can get. Toilet paper, there's a couple of brands I buy, and my rule of thumb is it's got to be down to 50 cents a roll. Okay. So if I have to buy 24 to get that price, recently the 24-pack was $12. It's not going to go up, and eventually you're going to use it all, whether there's 2 of you or 12 of you. So say I pay $12 for 24 rolls. I had a look this week. The price for 4 rolls, the normal price, was $3.99. So that's $1 a roll. That's double what you would pay if you bought the 24 up front. So I've save $12. Okay, and it's a while before I have to start looking for it on special again. Okay, laundry powder is another good example. As I said before, I don't buy the cheapest. I buy about the middle of the range. I buy mine in bulk at Big W, or Kmart, I think, sells the big boxes as well. Okay, if I can get the big box on special, that's even better. So I did some comparisons on that this week too. 1 kilo was $9. So if you multiply that out to buy 7.5 kilos, like I get in my box, that comes to, I haven't put the number there, $67.50, which is $27.50 more than what you've paid if you bought it in a big box to start with. Now, if you don't want a great big box in your laundry, even just going for the 2-kilo pack will save you money, because it's instead of $9 a kilo, it was $15 for 2-kilo box. So that comes to $7.50 a kilo. So that's going to save you more than $10 on buying it in 1-kilo packs, so down to it's about $10 less buying it in 2 kilos for that 7.5 kilo amount, but it's still $16 more than buying it in the big box to start with. Okay, so if I go through about 3 boxes a year, that's $83 less I've paid for laundry powder. Now, you can look for the specials still. Like this week in the specials, I saw at one shop the 1 kilo one for $6 and the 2 kilo one at a different shop for $12. So both of those have come down to $6 a kilo. So you could go and stock up, and that would be saving a fair amount. But it still hasn't come down to the $5.30 a kilo that we've paid in the big box. Okay, so that's just an example of how you can save by buying in bulk. Okay. Now, just a couple of things which will mean you should add more into your budget for food. If you're on like a special diet, gluten-free or dairy-free or whatever, there's now a lot of specialty food available for that, but it seems to be more expensive than its normal counterpart, and it doesn't seem to be on special very often. So you just have to allow more for that. Or maybe if you know someone that has that sort of diet, they might have found some shortcut ways to buy stuff. Now, the other thing is there's a lot of people that are going for organic or chemical-free or that sort of diet these days. To save money here, there are fruit and veggie co-ops or buying. My sister-in-law is very into that. I know she gets together with a group of like-minded friends and they will buy a hind quarter of beef and divide it between them. And they save a fair bit that way. But often you need to factor in things like driving to pick stuff up from shops which aren't local, like your supermarket. And you've got to spend the time dividing it up and handing it out. And you need to read labels very carefully, and often cook from scratch, so none of the pre-processed, pre-prepared, easy stuff. And my third point I was going to say here was I'm a very basic cook, so my budget is fairly basic things. If you really like to cook, then it may be that there are ingredients, you know, more exotic ingredients than I buy, that you will need to allow more for. But at the same time, you can still apply the same principles to shopping for those ingredients. Okay, just a few points to finish off about buying things other than food. For things like clothes, department stores have regular percentage off sales, and they do clear out the end of season stock. So it's worth looking for reductions in price. As with food, there are many ways to not pay the full ticketed price that they have on things. If you're buying larger items like fridges or even small electrical items like cameras, there are sites on the internet where you can go and compare prices and research to find out which brand will suit you best. Then you can look out for the specials. So do your research first, and then, so don't just go out and buy the first one you see, but work out which one is going to suit you best and then look for the best price. Warehouse sales can also be a great place to get a bargain, but I tend to avoid book ones because I spend lots of money. Second-hand stores are also a great place to find bargains, but again, a warning of going in there, and watch out for buying stuff that you don't really need. Dan headed off to get a sports jacket recently, hoping to get one cheap. And he came home with a tent and two pairs of flippers and two umbrellas, which they were all great bargains, and the umbrellas actually we desperately needed. So, but he still didn't end up with a jacket at the end of it. So just to sum up what I've been saying, I guess to go to the shops knowing what you want, have an idea of how much you're prepared to pay, and take full advantage of the specials that they offer. Resist the impulse to buy those things that you don't really need. And these things will help you with your budget, and Stuart has another tip for you.
Thanks, Christine. Now I know why there's no toilet paper in our house. Not by enough, first wife. First couple of questions. Who has home and contents insurance or car insurance? Who got a renewal in the last 12 months? In the last 12 months? Keep them up if you actually phoned around or went on the net and got comparative prices. A few people, that's good. You have done it now, have you? Thanks. I just pass on a example of where we saved, get the right number, $343. Our home and contents insurance is with AAMI, very nice people. Our monthly bill or thing was $87.16. We got our renewal in May, $116.41 per month. That's an increase of $351 or 33% year on year. Now, there's been fires in Victoria. There's been floods out west. There's been storms. And I know we all have to share it, but that was a bit heavy. Right? But nice people at AAMI, as you had on the statement, if there are no changes to these details and you want to continue to pay your insurance by monthly instalments, and now I'm big bold, you do not need to do anything. How nice is that? How nice? So I went on the net, took me a couple of hours, went on the net, went to all the RACQs, Suncorp, so forth, and some were higher, some were lower. And then I went back to AAMI site. I had our renewal notice, and I went, same price, exactly the same. Pushed get quote. Ready for it? Remember, our old one was $87.16, went up to $116. The new quote, $87.83. The same insurance company. So I went, buy now. Impulse buying, I know, but. And then I phoned up the very nice person at AAMI and said, I don't want to renew the insurance policy. And she said, have you got insurance with anybody else? And I said, no, I've actually got insurance with you. So I cancelled. And so that actually saved us $343. We've done the same with our car insurance. Right? The reason why we went to these people originally was because they're cheapest. Well, they're not cheapest, they at least give you a really good service. So we actually did it with our car insurance, but we actually left AAMI with our car insurance. People, check it. It's a great way to save money. And as Christine's already said, there are lots of ways to save money, but there's also lots of ways to actually cost yourself money, okay, by doing things that you're not really that good at. Here's a classic example. Happening, and it's actually called bill shock, mobile or iPhone shock. Here's what it is.
This is how you turn it off. This is your email. This is a picture from your trip to Europe. And this is your $4,190 AT&T bill after your trip to Europe. On your own.
Believe it or not, that is a real phone bill. And it's not the worst that's on the net. There are $20,000 ones. The reason why that was so high is because of international roaming. In fact, a friend of ours was telling me the other day that they'd just been over in Canada. And whenever her and her husband got separated, she'd phone. Darling, Darryl, where are you? The only problem was when she got home, she realised that the phone call was international roaming, was $5 to get to Australia, $5 for him to receive it, $10 to find out that he's just in the next aisle. There's a recent survey done in the States, right, and it's Federal Communications Commission News Survey of American consumers of broadband and cell phone services finds that 1 in 6 cell phone users has experienced bill shock, i.e. a sudden increase in their monthly bill when they had not changed the service plan. Among those who have experienced bill shock, few were alerted by the carriers that it was coming before or after the bill arrived. And most of that is not because of international roaming. Okay. Now, I saw an ad yesterday for Optus, actually, and I see that they're saying, no bill shock, we'll tell you before you hit the limit, so that's pretty good. Right. So 1 in 6 users are going to hit it. So that means in the third row there, 1 in 6 of you are going to get bill shock. It'll be him. Right. So in Australia, actually, and the worst thing about this is that almost a quarter of people get bill shock at $100 or more. And half people will get a phone bill, a bill shock of $50 or more. And this includes people on cat plans as well, which we'll go through in a minute. So in Australia, 3.5 million people are going to get bill shock. Right? And why? Well, there's actually more mobile services in Australia than there are people. There are actually more mobile phone services in Australia than there are people. 32% of people own more, have more than one mobile phone. Now, some of them are going for work and some of them for personal use, but 32%. Right? The other reason why people are going to get bill shock is that 98% of people use them for voice, but 99% is using them for text or SMSing. Right? And then 34% use them for emails. Now, years ago, emails on phones used to be the domain of the business people. They all had their crackberries, and they used to phone. Now, everybody, with the invention of this thing and all the other ones that people have got around, emails is so common, right? And that's and it's using your data. That's the big thing. If you download a attachment, it's using your data. And then also 45% of people visit websites, and that's using your data. So what do you do to address this? If you, when you get your account, right, check them. Right, you'll see an example in a minute of somebody who's been well and truly overcharged. But check them. What are you checking them for? If you're checking them for included call costs, message bank retrieval and diversion, SMSing, the data that's used, and their free calls. I know Dan and Christine actually don't SMS each other, because if they do, it costs them 25 cents. But on their plan, they actually get free calls between each other. Right? Okay, so they actually make the phone call. If you do find an error, call them. Right? Don't just go, oh, it's an error, great, and bitch and moan about it. Actually do something about it. And here's an example of somebody. Right? This plan is $69, and months 4, 5, and 6 are free. So this very first bill that they got on the $69 plan, and it's got lots of phone calls and free SMS, free message bank, got charged $115. Overcharged $46. Call them. Sorry, I'm actually on the $69 plan. You got me down to $79, but I'm on the $69 plan, and you've actually charged $115. Oh, sorry about that. We'll fix it up. So the person paid $69, and the nice people at Optus fix it up. Till the next month. Hang on a second. We're on a $69 plan. We charged $79. No, there's no excess usage on this, by the way. So now being charged $10.22 more for this one, plus our $69, and we want to get on the right plan. Okay, well, no problems. So total overcharge at this stage, $56. The next bill. $261 on a $69 plan, because they charged this person to go from the plan that they put him on onto the plan that he should have been on. Right? Phones up. Check them. Cool. Come on, people, you're playing around here. So now month four comes. The free month? Check, that's $85. 6 months. Right? Then month five, free. Nice new statement, by the way. It's really good. Nice new statement. Right? Should be free. Total overcharge, $411. How do I know about it? Me. It was me. The lady after the poor accounts people were really lovely, but there you go. So it does happen. The thing is, don't give up. I only ever paid the $69. Right? And a lot of people say, oh, it's only $10. Well, if every bill was over by $10, for 22 million users out there, $2.6 billion into additional. Now, don't get me wrong, bills go the wrong way, both ways. If you do check them and it's in your favour, don't tell them. And if, when you're checking them, there's one time I'll allow you not to check them.
Page of home bill.
The other thing is, has anybody ever come up to you and gone, do you like my new phone? And you say, how much does it cost? And it's free? Nothing's free. There's no such thing as a free thing. And you say, so it's free? Yeah. And what's the catch? Oh, I actually get the pleasure of using this phone on a really high bill, on a high plan, for 24 months. So there's no such thing as a free mobile phone. There's no such thing as free calls. It's all built into your plan. So just a quick snapshot of some plans. Prepaid plans, the best budgeting thing you can do, best discipline, because when you run out, you run out. And then you've got to go buy more credit. Be aware the cost of the calls are higher and they do have expiry. Right? But some of the plans are 6 months before they expire. Right? The cost a bit more, the call cost. Now that this sort of plan is great for people at uni or school who don't have flexible incomes, or people who just like my mother who just has a mobile phone so she'd be trendy. The next one, which is one that you saw, it's a postpaid one. Right? Be aware there is bill shock, there's data. Check your faithful, right? International roaming and call diversions. And this is what a normal plan looks like. I picked on Optus before, so I should pick on Telstra. But they're all pretty much the same. Okay, so this is a $40 plan. Right? It's for a total package that includes a new mobile phone. Cost me $40, $906 over a year. A recent survey actually found that the average mobile phone call lasts 1 minute and 40 seconds. It's the first time since 1993 that it's actually dropped below 2 minutes. So for 1 minute and 40 seconds, right, what would be the cost of using of a phone call here? 4 times 38, it's 38 cents a thing, $1.52. Anybody get that $1.52? Plus the faithful, the connection cost. Okay, 27 cents, make sure you add that in. Now, that means that an average cost, the wage cost me $1.79. But the beauty of it is, I get $35 worth of free calls, or included calls, not free. That means I can actually make 19 and a half calls a month. That's not bad. The classic is, though, that if I was to make 5 phone calls a day, every day of the month, it'll cost me $273.59 on this plan. Right? Okay, a long way from our $40, but I still get my 19 and a half free calls. So obviously, folks, you've got to choose the plan, and that's why a lot of people go for a capped plan, which is this. Be aware, you can still get bill shock, and I'll explain to why in a minute. Right, so you still have to worry about your flag falling, your rates. Your rate on a mobile plan is usually higher. Right? On a cap plan, sorry. Yep, so yeah, average call. So if you look here at a plan, it's for the same phone, it's $49. But I've got $400 worth of included calls. And I get 200 megabytes of data. It costs me 40 cents a call, for every 30 seconds, and 37 cents a flake. It's a bit dearer, but the beauty of this cap plan is that if I make one call every day, or five calls every day, I'm still well below the $400. Right? So you've got to check your plans and make sure the plan's right for you. Okay. But be aware, it's not a cap. A cap seals stuff, right? This is more like the oil leakage in the Mexican Gulf. It is. They got the first cap, put it on with the oil coming out, oil filled it up. Once it was full, it came out and started seeping back up. A cap is like that, but it's got a lot bigger cap than what they use there. It just fills up and then goes out. So if you're looking for a mobile phone plan, certainly do your numbers, work out how many phone calls you're using and how much data you're using as well, because data is going to be a big puncher here. Right. And things to watch here, watch your emails. As I said, if you're downloading attachments, it includes Watch your apps. Use good things are great. The apps, just push button, it happens. Watch your radio apps. All right. I downloaded a Triple M one the other week, and it's not like the old phones where it was an FM receiver. It's an app. It uses 14.1 megabytes per hour. So on my 200 megabyte plan, I've got 15 hours worth of included radio. Fortunately, I realised and went, I just listened to radio in the car instead. So folks, when you've got onto the wrong plan, you've got to work it out, and you're probably on a contract for 24 months or 12 months, you're really going to have to start financing something. And then it's a really good time to go speak to Darren. So he's up now, so then you get a chance to speak to him later on.
Isn't saving exciting? Who's excited? I think when you look at saving, you've got to have a reason why. Why are you saving? It's got to be bigger than yourself. It's got to be a big reason. Else you just won't do the day-to-day. Is the reason that you want to save is to maybe own a home one day where you don't have to pay rent anymore. And that is the reason that you're going to save and make the choices. Or maybe you've seen someone that hasn't got their finances together and you're thinking, yeah, I don't want that to happen to me. So you've got to have a why you're going to do this, and then that'll help you make the right choices as you go shopping, as you make other choices in your life. The next thing you do is you've got to get started. Everything you do in your life, you have to have that start point. If you don't start, it's not going to happen. And then you also need to think long term. You've got to change your mindset and think down the track. Where am I going? Why am I doing this? And you keep thinking of the why. Associate with people that want you to improve, and mix with those sort of people. The next thing I'd suggest is be coachable. Enable people to speak into your life that have had some good success and show you a way to get there. And start to mix with some of those people you want to become. Get some tips off them. The next thing I'd like to say to you is goal setting. Have a look at that long term. Set a goal. It might be when I've got to get rid of that mobile phone plan. Set that time that's happening now and do it. Make the change. If it's buying that home, say, right, I'm going to plan and I'm going to buy that home at a particular period. Maybe it's this year or next year. Set a time frame. You might have a debt, a credit card debt you want to get rid of. Set a time. I want to get rid of that debt by now, by this period. Have a look at your budget and see how you can work out a plan to do it. Or you might have a liability around your neck, like a great big car that's costing you a fortune. And you might say, I want to get out of debt. I may get rid of that car now and set a time to do it. You've got to keep going back to why are you doing this? What do you want to do? Do you want to achieve that time where I'm not going to pay rent anymore? I'm going to own that home. I'm going to have financial freedom for my family. Or it may be that reason. You've seen someone in dire straits financially and say, I don't want to be there. So you make that choice. But to make the choice, you've got to get out of that comfort zone. And just make little steps, chip it away, step after step after step. You can and make a choice to be successful, a choice to be responsible to get to where you want to be, a choice to find a solution to get yourself there. And the real choice is changing the mindset so that you say, this is where I'm heading, this is where I want to be. And now I need to have to work through this a bit, don't I? Okay. And I've also got to just share, like Stuart said, I'm here with St. George Bank tonight, and we're going to give you a lot of information, but you need, for your decision making, St. George is not holding any responsibility for that. You just have to make the choices, talk to financial advisors to make accurate decisions, but I'm really hopeful that you'll get a lot of good information tonight. Okay. Okay. Alright, now with refinancing, you come back to the choice. Why? Why are you refinancing?
A lot of people come in and they want to refinance, and it may be to get some more spending money so they can go out and buy some more things, and then you'd have to question really why are you doing that? Do you really want to keep digging a hole of debt? Refinance, but if it's to reduce your debt, consolidate, bring it together, and get a good payment plan so you can get released from that debt, that's a good reason to refinance.
Do you do it yourself?
I'd just like to tell you a little story, an example of a young guy close to me, owed about $12,000, and in a world of pain, you know, bought a little bit of furniture on credit, holiday, got up the credit card a little bit, and all of a sudden got a debt, the job's on shaky ground, and really in a world of pain, wondering what's going to happen tomorrow, I've got to pay these bills. But wanted to do it himself, too proud, won't talk to anyone, and I find it with young people. You've got to talk. And just for the 10-minute conversation, guy's in a long-term relationship, and so I said, well, get your partner together. If you make this sort of payment now, you'll be debt-free in 7 months. And just the weight lifted off the shoulders. And can't believe how he can actually find a way out. A lot of young people, I'm talking to family and kids here, they don't want people to know their business. But you've got to share with somebody. You've got to share your pain. And there's people out there that have good knowledge that can help you along the way. Another thing that I really see a lot of, and it concerns me greatly, is women. And I see a lot of people come into the bank, and I see different issues that they've ended up with. Women buying cars. It's just not a good mix that I've seen. Even in an environment like a church like this, you see a young woman come in distressed, life a bit messed up, has a few kids, maybe no husband anymore. The team gets behind her, the church might help her go and tidy her house, the guys over mowing the lawn, lift her up, build her up a bit, get her going, she feels good, get her into a job and she's working, got income. And then the next thing, goes out and buys a car. You know, walks down to a car yard, they say, thanks for coming. And they sell her a car well above the price, hook her up with a high interest rate on the car, and she's in trouble for half a dozen years. And all the hard work initially. So, yeah, I really encourage a place like this. There's a lot of people with a lot of good knowledge. That's not tapped in by the church sometimes. So talk to people.
Get some good information. And once again, I have to talk about the young guys and often buy a car.
And I see them come into the bank all the time, destroyed about their debt. And they might rock up and say, bought a big car, and say, have a look at my car. What do you think about that? And a person that knows, they've been down the road a little bit, already has done a calculation in their mind and realised how much pain that car's going to cost that guy and spoil his future. So
I've got a passion for young people to not make these bad choices. Now, as we go up, your group of advisors, I really, if you get something out of this tonight,
is to get together a group of advisors for your life. If you were Kerry Packer, you'd have your group going. So I think we need our group too. I know if you came into this environment like this church, the pastor would be looking after your spiritual life, showing you a few way to go, trying to show you not to hit some obstacles and looking out for your life. You know, you've got friends and parents a bit worried about your emotion. When your emotions aren't going too well or you're struggling a bit, you can go and hook up with your friends and they make you feel better. So you build a list of advisors. If you're married and your marriage is on the rocks, don't do it yourself. Get a counsellor to help you, give you some tips, or hook up with a strong married couple and build them into your advisors in your life as you head down the track. I've got a young guy in our church, Kim. He's excellent at buying cars. He can buy a car every 6 months, make money on it, turn it over, and he'll say, come here and have a look at my new car. You know, and would I take him to go and have a look at a car with me? I sure would. I'd say, come, Kim, I'm buying a car. Can you come and have a look? And I encourage you to have, you know, people like that on your list. They've got good knowledge about cars and that sort of thing. A mechanic. If there's a good mechanic in the church, you know, get him on your list, a guy that you can trust. And he can tell you about a car, what sort of model to get, give you good information on it. And also, we've got Vincent here tonight. He's just an exceptional man in home lending. He's, for St. George Bank Queensland, won Home Loan Lender of the Year. And he works with me. He's got just a large group of people that follow him and stick with him. They will not go anywhere else because he sets them up for life with their future and their home lending. So put him on your advisor list. Put me on your list. I love talking to people about, you know, your finance. And, you know, I've got experience and understand a lot of things and how to whittle down, and it wouldn't be if you wanted to open an account or if you got major debt or anything. Always glad to talk to you. So put us on your list for sure. And this is for the younger people again. You always set out to impress the right people. You know, the young kids, they go to work, they want to impress their peers, and they might end up buying a hot car or something to look good at work. But that's going to cause them pain. A mature person that's been down the road a bit knows where you should be heading, and they're the people you need to impress. Impress, you know, your parents, impress the older people around you. If you make a right decision and as a cars, I've seen so much damage with cars. If you turn up with a responsible decision, buy a good car from, there's older couples out there selling cars all the time, looked after perfectly, for not much cost. You can buy that, you rock up, and people that have been down the road will look at you and say, you've made a great choice, a good decision. And that's what I encourage young people, to impress the right people, not try to impress the peers. So as we move on to the next one. Impulse purchases.
Man, when you're not feeling good, you want to go out and buy something to make you feel good. I've done it myself. Been at work, working really well, the boss comes and balls me out after I've tried my best, and so I'm driving home, I pull over at a car yard on the way and say, gosh, if I buy that car I'll be feeling better. But common sense prevails, thank God, and walked out of there without that car and made some better choices. Yeah, you can have bad day at work. Your life can be tough at home, or you can be doing it tough, but don't go and make that impulse purchase. It's going to cause you more pain later. Cars and luxuries depreciate in value, so don't get hooked up in them. You know, the young guys, if they watch the V8 supercars on the weekend, they think, yes, I need that Falcon. I've got to go and buy that beautiful big Falcon. Goes down, signs him up, it'll cost you about $43,000. For that Falcon, do you know in 2 years that car will be
worth $19,000 loses 50% of its value. That's $200 a week. And even a two-year-old car is a bit too new, in my opinion. Especially, all right to go and buy something when you've cracked it, but not when you're trying to make a future. And you've got to keep remembering, why am I not buying that car? Because this is where I want to be. What I do, and I'll tell you another circumstance. I've seen a partner, kids, two partners come in, kids, everything, had the house, had the works, had the car, family, going well. And they've overspent on renovating their home. Okay, and then payments have got really tough, so what do? They sold their house. And then they've come in. What do you think their options are now? They still got big debt because they spent too much on the home. So they've still got debt. They come in, but they're a bit freed up with the cash. So their decision is, how about we go and buy a new car? Go and spend another $40,000. And in the conversation they're saying, we want to save and we want to get rid of our debt. So I said, please come in and I'll have a serious talk with you. If you go and buy that car, it's going to cost you $12,000 in interest and depreciation in the first year, let alone the next year and the next year. So it's going to cost you a fortune that you're never ever going to see again. That car's going to depreciate and then you'll want to do it all over again. One of the reasons that they wanted to sell the car was they needed new tyres. And I said, we'll lend you the money for the tyres, go and get the car done. It was a beautiful car, had low K's on it, good model, perfect for family. And I said, buy the new tyres and save yourself $12,000 this year. And they're happy with those thoughts, but sometimes they're just not thinking right. So if you got anyone thinking like that, send them to me, I'll have a talk with them.
Okay. Well, I'll touch on a couple of things there. Young guys come in.
And I get concerned about their debts. If they're thinking about different things, or if you want to buy something, go and test your repayment plan. Work out how much it's going to cost you and try paying that amount for a couple of months and just see if you can handle the pain as well. It's another good way to check if you can afford things.
I'll mention a couple of things here on super, first of all. I know I'm targeting young people a little bit here tonight as well, but I just want to make sure that they don't make mistakes so that they can get on the track, and as parents as well, that you can help lead your kids into some information, or you can definitely send them to see me. Superannuation, St. George Bank have a brilliant idea where you can open a superannuation account. It's a fund been going for a long time. So you can have your normal transaction account, your super account, you log online, you can see everything. You can watch your super going in each week from the employer, 9%, you can watch it grow. And it builds in them an attitude of, I've got money saving in super. And some of them have about four different supers out there, especially when they start off as kids. We can roll them all into the one, put them in that account, and they get that knowledge of saving, long-term thinking. And then if they get into a company established and they've got a great super, they can roll it out in there at a later date. But early on, I really encourage young kids to come in, open up that superannuation account where they can watch it, make sure the employer's paying them super, which in some cases they don't. And also at St. George, for the older people, I know when I wasn't with St. George, I went out to get advice on financial planning. Cost a fortune, like a couple of grand for simple information. You can come to St. George where we are and you can talk to a planner free of charge. He'll give you an hour of good advice and, so there's something there. We try and I encourage all my customers to have a talk to them. Especially if you're getting in the old, a few years older, around the 50 or up, have a good chat, and it does cost you nothing. If you want to go on with that, they'll let you know if there's a charge involved.
Yeah, car purchases. Yeah, big problem with depreciation. So, you know, I encourage you to, young guys and girls, there's great cars out there. If you get hold of a bloke that knows how to buy cars at a price and a mechanic that can recommend good prices. And also, I know a really scary thing is if they break down, they're a little bit older, but if you compare it to the massive depreciation you can have, there's a little pain there. Get RACQ assist and persist with something a little bit older is what I could say to you to get to why you want to be at your other direction. Okay, and I'll just right now I'm going to on home purchases. I'll just give you a little bit of information, and Vincent and me will be here to ask any questions. But I'm just going to share some simple sums to give you an idea on a great window of opportunity to buy a home. So the sums are this: like on your annual salary, you generally can borrow about 5 times what you earn annually. So if you were on $50,000, like Stuart was saying earlier, 50 is a good number. It's $250,000 that you could borrow when you're on that salary, right? Pretty hard to get a home for that. If you went out and bought the big car and it cost you $100,000 a week, that's $5,000 a year. You have to take $5,000 off your 50, so you're down to 45. So that's 25 less. So you'd only be able to borrow 225 then. If you had a child, you've got to take another 5,000 off. So then you're down to say 200 you could borrow on an income of 50. So they're really rough rule of thumb there. But what happens in life is a perfect window for young couples, and that is a young man or a woman's earning 50,000. They decided not to buy that car. They haven't had any children just yet, and someone else comes into their life, a young couple, and make good choices early. All of a sudden, they both might be earning 50, so that's 100,000 salary. So now they can borrow 500,000, and you wouldn't need that amount. There's a lot of good homes out there for around the 300,000 still. So that's just the prime opportunity for them to start their life and invest in a home. And with that, like with home lending, a bit of a rule of thumb is every 7 to 10 years they'll double in price, your wages go up, so the sooner you start in that motion, you start to really build some traction in your life. I know we're just about to handle over to the panel, but I'll just show you one other thing to get familiar with, and there's calculators. You can use the St. George website, and you can really start to do some sums for yourself to work out, if you've got a debt, you can work out what your payments will be. If you want to buy something, you can work out also your home lending options.
You want to join me, Ben? Or you're up?
Come on. So if I'll get Vincent to join me, and we'll just do a few figures to get familiar with things. Acacia Ridge, I'd imagine you can buy a home around the 300, maybe a little bit more. Interest rate at the moment 6.73. We'll put 300 in there, I think.
Just the London one.
Yeah.
You're on the London
300,000. Yeah. Is it backspacing? Then you can play around, but I'll do it as weekly so we can compare it to like rent. Normal home loans. Okay, you pay principal and interest, and if you can see that amount there, the weekly repayments are about $485, which is a fair bit more than rent. But if you look at, you put it into interest only, and it's $388 on a $300,000 loan. So, do you want to talk to him about this one? Yeah. All right. This is Vincent Specialty, he's the lender. So,
So basically, with the home repayments, we're talking again about how you can save your money and how you can try to pay it faster. Only by trying to pay it on a fortnightly basis or weekly basis, you can save around about 5 years. So if you've got a 30 years loan, you probably can pay it out within 25 years, just by doing it fortnight payment, you know. And I think it's wise to follow what is your pay pattern. So if you are paid fortnightly, might as well pay your loan fortnightly, or weekly, pay it weekly. It's for two purposes. Number one, you aim to pay for your loan first. It's not that to be safe for the bank. No, not that. It's to make sure, number one, is that you've got a good record with the bank. It's good for your future loans, number one. Number two, you make sure that the things is paid on time. And also by paying that fortnightly, you save 5 years in terms of payments. Yeah. So, you want to...
All right, you want to talk about the rent compared to the...
Yeah. Okay. Why... let me get back again to because we are in the budget situation, budget explanation. Yeah. It's been explained by all the speakers before that to be wise in the use of your own money. This is from my experience handling my clients. Most of the clients who are purchasing cars and things like that, you know that cars are items that is depreciating, whereas house is depreciating. Well, let me tell you what is exactly the depreciation speed and the appreciation speed of both. For a car, in my experience, I've been so fortunate that I've been driving cheap car to the expensive car, and I know that the more expensive is the car, the more money that you lose. In expensive cars, within probably 3 years, after 3 years, the value of the car is only half. Maybe a cheaper car is not like that. It's at least a bit better. But the more expensive, the more you lose money. That and just imagine, I've got a client from my experience too that, you know, being a youth, like what he said, he like to impress his friends. He's got 20,000. He's got 20,000 in his pocket. But he wants to buy a car of 43,000 or something. So he end up borrowing money. He came to me before that. I feel like buying a car, but I also want to buy a house. I told him before, look, if you plan it correctly, you can buy both the house and the car. But you must plan it properly. Not you must sacrifice yourself first to plan for your future, for your better future. And he end up, still being a young guy, he buy the car first. Okay, so he came back to me, I also want to buy a house now. I said, where is your money? 20,000, I asked him. Oh, it's gone for the car. I said, so do you have any more money? No, nothing. So I told him, look, by what you're doing, you know what chances that you missed? This is the chances that you missed. All you need to get a home loan is a pure genuine saving of 5% of the value of the house. Say 5% of 300,000 is only talking about 15,000. Okay? And 400,000, 5% is 20,000. So that guy is in fact got a genuine saving of 20,000. So he can buy a house of 400,000 that time. I told him, if you did that one first, you buy the house first, you concentrate on buying the house, and then if you see that the appreciation of the house in Australia, like what Darren described, is roughly about every 8 to 10 years it doubles. That is on average. But if you pick up the right property in the right spot, the right timing, some people can do it in 5 years it doubles. I cannot really convince you until you have done it. Okay? But the people who has bought it, whoever in this room who has bought it, I'll ask them what is the price of the house today, their house, if they have bought it 5 or 10 years ago, I'll let them tell you how much they bought it for. I'm very sure that it is at least has gone up by 50 to 100%. See? So what I told this guy is that if you get to that step, then after 3 to 5 years your value your property is going up. Say if it is, if you started with 400,000, 5 years I assume it 50% up. 50% up is 200,000. What can he buy with 43,000? It's a good car. It's probably like a Honda special or whatever. But I tell him with 200,000 increase of your property, I can extend your loan to get your car. What car can you buy? It's a BMW or Mercedes or what, you know? So if you plan it properly, don't buy your car first. Just get a decent car for 5,000 or 10,000, so long as it doesn't cost you money to service it. In the end, you can get a house and a car at the same time, but a good car. And what is your loan cost? It costs you very small because you're taking it from your home equity. When you take it from your home equity, the loan is the same as your home loan, which is only at 6.73%. As compared to your car loan, it costs you 14%. And just to be more drastic again, let me explain. A car loan, if you have a car loan of 40,000, is equivalent to getting a home loan of 400,000. See, about 10 times that you, whatever you can borrow in car, you can borrow in home value of 10 times. The reason is very simple. Especially if you take a bank loan for a car loan, which is called a personal loan, is nowadays is priced at around about 14%, believe it or not. And that's not a good idea to get a personal loan for a car. It's just too expensive. And home loan is only 6.73, which means the interest is double. And somehow, for car loans, it's got to be paid within 5 years. And for home loan, you can pay it for 30 years, which is 6 times. So the interest is 2 times and the repayment is faster by 6 times. So you end up like 12 times. Yeah? But going back to that guy, when he came back to me after 1.5 years, almost 2 years, he came back to me, I asked him, what's your car value? So he came around, I know it already, but I just want to ask you. He said, 43,000 and it's now valued only 20,000. So I said, what can you get with that? You know, it's just your pride over 2 years. What's the value of your pride for 2 years? Now if you want to get back, get real. And then he sold that car. He buys a cheaper car. Then he start with that money. He buy a house, which he can only because 20,000 sold. He's got to buy a car of 5,000, and he's got only 15,000 left. So he can only buy a house around about 300,000. So he looked for a house for 200. He managed to find a good house in Alchester for 250,000. Okay, 250,000. So I did the loan for him, 250,000. He bought the house, and in less than 2 years, and guess what is the value of the house? It's 350. So I told him, look, if you change it around that time, today you, if you, I asked him again, do you want to buy a car? I can lend you to buy a car. It's increased by 100,000. I can give you a loan of 80,000. I tell him what car he can get, like a BMW or Mercedes or, you know, this the Circle 1-2, the Audi. Yeah, you can get that. Guess what? After he tasted what is the value of his wealth building, that he can make that money, he came back to me and said, now I want to buy my second house.
Yeah.
And today he has 3 houses.
Yeah, good stuff.
So I just want to encourage you that like what the previous speaker told you too, that the fact that borrowing is not a sin. Okay? Borrowing is nothing wrong with that. But please remember, he always warned you too, that borrowing, it depends what kind of borrowing. I don't agree with borrowing for luxury goods, it's been explained. For buying something that is depreciating, no, no. That's not right. But if you borrow to increase your wealth for your family, it's good for you and good for the community, it's good for your church. Because why? Because you're getting richer. And if you're getting richer, your tithing is getting bigger. The church will like it. See? And also the community will love you because you're just upgrading yourself. You know? I've got another testimony of one of my clients. Very simple explanation that I started with, you know. That time when she came to me about 10 years ago, the interest rate of Australia was so cheap, 5.5% fixed rate for 5 years, that time. And do you know that in Brisbane, on average, if you talk about $300,000 of house, that house, if it is rented, is about $300 per week. And that means 52 weeks in a year is 5.2% return. See, what is the difference in interest rate and the rental? The difference is only 0.3%. But I told her, even though the interest is going up, which I locked her up already for 5 years, fixed 5.5, which is worth it, I said. It is worth it to lock it. Because interest rate, if it is below 6% in Australia, just lock it up for 3 years or 5 years, is worth it, because it's normally between 6 to 7%, is running around the area. But again, I'm not advising on that. I disclose myself. Yeah. But that's your choice. But she picked up that choice. So I told her, even though the interest is 6% and average rental is 5%. So if you got a rental of 5% and you have to pay for 6%, you lose 1%. For every 300,000 property, it was an investment for her, you're only risking yourself only 1% of 300,000. How much is it? It's only $3,000 per year. Is that a big money for you? I asked her. She's a single mom. I was too daring to her, because I know she got a very potential, because she works very hard and she ended up paying high tax for nothing, and she can do a bit of negative gearing, and that 1% loss, in fact, you can claim against your tax, then you can get tax deduction over your negative, it's called negative gearing. So if you earn like 80,000 and you lose every year is 1%, is 3,000. So what you can claim on that year's tax is that 80,000 less your 3,000 loss first, you're paying tax only on the 77,000. You're not paying on the 80,000 as before. So from that loss 3,000, partly is on, you get it back from your tax deduction. See, even though if you don't get that one, I told her, it's 3,000 times 10 years is how much? It's only 30,000, is it? And your property doubles to from 300 to 600 in 10 years, which is the average. I'm not using something more than that. So it's talking about 300,000 in terms of making money, profit. Less 30,000 is 270,000 that you made. And furthermore, the taxation in Australia is so good. It's an accountant here. So I hope I didn't say something wrong. If it is an investment and you keep it for more than 1 year, your capital gain tax over the profit is only half. You only pay half of it. If you make 300,000, you only pay only 150,000. And if your husband and wife, and you can split it into two, so 150,000 becomes 75,000 and 75,000 husband and wife tax. If wife is not working when you sell it, that means you start from the 75 from zero ground, and you end up being tax low. See what I mean? So in that sense, this lady that met me, in 7.5 years, she made profit of 1 million. It's not impossible. It is possible. It's been done. And that's what I'm saying. But actually, if you really want to go for it and you start following what the previous speaker said, it was so good that I even learned today how to budget myself. I normally don't budget myself. I just spend, and I learn how to budget now. I also want to budget myself in that sense. And if you can budget like that, I just saw so many savings that I could have done, you know. And by this saving, normal loans, if you can see here, how much do you pay a week? It's only $300, $400. And the difference between you renting it and you buy your own house is probably only less than $100 per week. And is that a big money? If you consider that, if that is the house that you live in, if that's the house that you live in, you're not even taxed when you make the profit. So if you buy 300, you sell it for 500, you make 200,000, it's not taxable because you live in it. And because of the time constraint, I think it's best that if you want to see me, or then you can come to the branch and we will explain you further on how to get the loan and everything, because there's so many ways of making it possible to get the loan. Either if you one person cannot do it yourself, do it 2%. I opened my head with an Italian family. I just last time his family, because they know they cannot do it one person, they do it in a family. You know, they do it 2-3%. Afterwards they stay in the same house anyway. You get what I mean? So they buy together, join forces like that. And then they get the equity. They buy for the second one, it's the same thing. So what's the difference? Forget about the first home grant, it's only 7,000. They only, if you do three people, you can only get 1 7,000 instead of 3 7,000. But if you make profit, you know, in 3 to 5 years it's 100,000, what is 7,000? Sometimes you have to wait the timing of the period when you buy the property. If you can make more, it's much more money there than the 7,000. Yeah. Anyway, I better cut it.
He wasn't going to speak.
Yeah, I'll hand back to Matt now. And just, like, we've had young guys come in. I'll tell you one more, 30 seconds. One guy, a neighbour of mine, we put him into a house, and he's a young guy with a young family, just had a baby, and we valued his house after 15 months, and it had gone up $102,000. And it's just, he thinks we're superstars, and, you know, at the bank, but it's not true.
Thank you. We are going to invite the four speakers to come up, and we can do some questions and answers. If you have got any questions you've written down, please feel free to ask them. So Christine as well, if you want to come forward. Vincent, come forward. We'll bring the chairs a bit closer in a moment. If you do have to rush off, time restraints obviously, feel free to go. Don't forget to grab your CD before you do leave, with the budgeting plan on it. But please, if you'd like to stick around and ask some questions, I'll be available with the microphone. We'll put your hand up, and you can have some helpful questions answered. That would be great. So if you do want to ask a question, raise your hand and I'll bring the microphone around, and these guys will be able to answer it for you. So thank you.
Got a question.
Sure. Okay.
What if you haven't got a deposit for a home loan?
First question already, what if you haven't got a deposit for a home loan? Very good question.
There's often an opportunity for families to get involved, and like if they've got equity in their own home, they can provide equity to the for a deposit on the loan without, so you still lend the whole amount to the purchaser, but the family can help in those ways, or they can help with the deposit amount, and you can get people into homes. We've done that on occasion. There is a way, so come and have a talk to us.
Great. Any other questions? Yep. Graham.
Okay, Stuart, phone bills. Interpreting phone bills. Telstra. One bill. And I've, a phone them every few months because, you know, there's You read through all, you know, you've got the internet, and you've got the phone, and you've got the mobile, we've got a postpaid mobile. Runs about, but you know, there's bits that add on, there's bits that come off, the bits that get carried forward from the last month to the next month. And it's magic. Right? It just kind of stuff happens and it looks about the right total. You know? Are they all the same? Is it all black magic?
Yeah, ours is in boxes, and that's actually coming home. And I actually had an example, and had recurring charges $89 for a month, $69 for a month, and then it's got special discounts. Then they had phone charges. Then they had data, and they actually had social internet. And I think that's Facebook, and I don't actually go on Facebook on my mobile phone. And then there was SMS charges, and then other discounts. It's really confusing. I think it's not just Telstra, I think it's everybody. But what you have to do is break it down piece by piece by piece. And in your case, you've probably got the 3-year all part of the total plan.
Yeah, so it's the one bill.
It is hard, and in our case, because it's a company phone, it's all non-GST and that GST, this gets too confusing. But you actually have to break it down. I'm an accountant, I'm reasonably good with numbers, but I get confused as well. Try to understand what they're saying, what they're doing. And if the bottom is right, you're pretty close to being right. So that's the other thing is, but I don't think it's just Telstra, it's everybody. And I was a bank in Telstra a lot, so I made a really...
I feel like it's all geared around confusing the client.
It probably is.
Just give me a bill, five calls.
Yeah, there's actually a thing on the internet where this woman had a 300-page phone bill on a mobile phone, and she was complaining not because of the bill, but because they said they actually sent it to her in a box. That one down, I don't know if you got it. I was joking, but this woman said she had a 300-page phone bill. Every SMS that she sent, listed massive. And the woman wasn't complaining because of the phone bill, she was complaining because of the environmental waste. And she wanted an e-bill, and they've actually changed it. So, let's get it through.
You mentioned the superannuation. Many people are wondering just what it'll be worth when it becomes your turn to be the beneficiaries. So some people have got like 12 times their contribution. Can the country stand it?
I can't talk on planners' advice as a branch manager, but you can definitely come up and have conversation with a planner, and they'd lay everything out for you, and there's definitely no cost to that, and I can give you a number to call, and you can even have conversation on the phone if that would help you. Okay.
It's not a level playing field. A friend of mine who was with the Brisbane City Council, and he was boasting about the big amount he was going to get. And I said to him, of course, they're probably doing it with ratepayers' money. And he didn't have an answer for that.
I couldn't quite understand what you said there, but I'll have a talk to you after that, and we'll get some.
I just guess for us, we're getting married in a couple of weeks. We've got two incomes around that $50,000 mark. So, like, what would be the benefit of us buying a house versus not paying the rates, not paying all those things for a house, and saving that extra money? If you can rent somewhere for $290 a week, looks like you're paying at least only $100 off a loan for minimum repayments there for 25 years. I mean, that to me sounds like a lot of money going into interest that we could be potentially saving.
Well, if you continue to rent and and save that portion of money, do you think you, in the say the 8 years time when that house for 300 was now 600, do you believe that you could save 300,000? If you're saving 100 a week by renting, it'd be 5,000 a year, virtually. So it's
more like, well, if you're renting, you're saying the rental value of that property is 300 a week, and the repayments of principal and interest is 480. So literally, you're talking almost $200.
Yep.
Investing that.
Okay, so say on a $300,000 loan, you'd be paying, say, 300 rent. The interest only on that is about 380, so you'd be paying 80 bucks more than rent, just to cover the interest. And then anything on top of that, you would be whittling the principal away. But what really gets you traction is, your wages continue to go up, the values of the home continually go up, and all of a sudden, you know, you're in a very, very strong position later on. But if you held off and, say, wanted to go in when the houses have doubled in 8 years' time at, say, 600,000, it's very difficult to get in.
Another point to consider is that from your experience to rent a property, do you realize that every year that you pay is increasing, the rental? And when you rent, every year it increases by around about 5%. And if you think about the interest rate itself, interest rate that your loan is declining and interest you can fix it too, your interest is virtually almost the same. So after 3 to 5 years, you end up, like what you said, on 280s. Number one, on the price increases that you will never catch up. Number two is that on the fact that you end up paying more rents anyway. By the time of the 3 years to 5 years, you're probably paying the same payments as your rent, as your loan, your home loan repayments. That is happening. Every time it's happening like that. Between 3 to 5 years, your rent payments would be equal to your home, your interest of your home repayments. Yeah.
Okay, other questions? Okay, so my question is more in regards to the shopping. Now, I've noticed, I just want to get your feedback. I'm seeing less and less specials at Woolies and Coles in a general basis. So is that something that you find and maybe you've had to adapt to do different things? What was that? Yeah.
I think it depends what you buy, very much. Because yeah. Most of what I buy, it's still, I haven't had to, as I say, there are some things that never seem to be on special, and some things that, you know, they might be every 8 weeks or so. But as I say, if you sort of, you know, after a while you can work out, okay, I need to buy 8 of those when they're on special, and by the time we're getting to the end, I know that they'll have one special again. Lots of people have said to me, Aldi. So, personally, for the stuff I buy, I haven't really found too much of a saving in grocery sort of things. But like the fruit and veggies and stuff is often very good compared to a lot of other places.
Okay, and just my next question is, I often like to look for the reduced meat at Woolies and that sort of stuff. But my question is more, their prices are a lot more expensive than a butcher's, even sometimes on a good day. If you were to go to a butcher's week in, week out, do you think you're as better off as if you only bought meat when it was reduced at Woolworths?
Say that again. If I went to a butcher's...
So if you only went to... Yeah, so you basically only used your butcher's... you know, are you probably better off than just waiting for the specials or the reductions at Woolies? Because sometimes you go to buy meat, it's not reduced, and then you end up buying the more expensive product.
Well, I don't.
Yeah.
That's a disappointment.
But that's true. But it's the
if you know what each of them is going to charge you, you can also know if the butcher's giving you a good deal. Because I've seen good butchers, and I've seen butchers that have, where we've bought meat that it's been horrible, and it hasn't been worth what they've charged. And then we've had very nice meat that's cost us a lot of money. So I think it's just shopping around and getting the best deal. And as I say, things come up on special at fairly regular intervals. I don't really think running from here to there to all over the place often saves you much more than picking one shop and utilising them the best. But as I say, I do shop at a few different places. And if I'm off at somewhere else, you know, say I've gone for coffee at Garden City and I see something good over there, well, I'll pick it up while I'm there.
Sorry, last question. Now, as you know, shopping at home has increased with both Woolworths and Coles providing that service. I'm somewhat worried that's more expensive or not as cheap if you're paying for a service. Mm-hmm. They're doing something for you. They're not doing it for free. You know, it's got to be.
As far as I haven't actually tried the online shopping, but I know there's a few people that do. And as far as I'm aware, their advertised prices are online as well, are they? Slightly more, okay. Slightly, so maybe not quite as good.
Yeah. But then if you factor, it's fine.
Yeah, that's right. Time to go to the shop. As someone was saying to me.
So if you collect, So
then you don't pay the delivery fee. And the other thing is, it means when you're writing your list, you're sitting at the computer. Oh, self-raising flour, do I need that? You can go and check in the cupboard. Oh, yes, I do. Tick the box. You're not seeing things all.
I suppose my worry though is that you don't get to see the reduced meat markdowns. You don't get.
Well,
to see
absolutely,
the
you're not going to get that. No.
Just I guess while people are talking about that, I just sort of let people know about there's a thing called Food Connect, which is basically like getting food from the market, and you can get it in a box. And a couple of guys at my work use that. And basically there's just a bunch of different places around Brisbane, people who do it and collect it, and it's based at Salisbury. Another thing people use is Rockley Market, so I guess it's just down the road, and it's pretty cheap too.
If you paid on a monthly basis, is it beneficial to change your payment for your home loan to be paid fortnightly?
Yes, absolutely.
Can you give me some figures just so that I can understand how it works? Give me an example. If I was paying $1,600 a month, paying a bond.
Because the interest is from the bank is normally calculated on a daily basis. So as soon as you make the payments, there is a reduction in your principal. So the interest is calculated on the principal left, and what is the interest? So your repayment is always be the same, but your principal portion will keep on increasing, and your interest portion will become keep on less and less.
Yes.
I know that there is a rounding figures there that the bank is always used. Normally, like if your monthly payment is 1,000, your fortnightly payment is divided by 2, which is not exactly right. You get what I mean? But the difference in terms of in dollars terms is negligible, but in terms of your quickness in the repayments is definitely is calculated in the calculator that it is reducing about 4 years and 8 months.
Right. Yeah. If you have an offset account though, if you have an offset account, surely then your money in the money in the bank account, because it's now less because it's going off twice in the month, would it not surely then affect that the interest of that?
One other option of improving the home loans is that you make it offsetting account.
Yes.
If you make it an offsetting account, at least the money in your account is offsetting towards your loan. Then that is also another good thing about it. But the thing is that
can you do the two together though?
Yes, you can do both.
Is it beneficial to do the two together?
You can do together. Yes, you can. But a lot of people don't realize, you know, when they pay monthly, actually in their account they build up the amount to the monthly payments. Why should they do it that way? And yet it's not affecting their repayments. You know, might as well, instead of building it up, just pay it, you know, and then your interest is straight away dropped. That's how it works. And best, of course, yeah, nowadays all my clients, if it is on offsetting account, can only be created against a variable rate interest rate, a variable interest rate. So I always connect it to offsetting account. And that's the best way, because the way it works is that, say if you have a loan of 300,000 and you've got 10,000 in your account, your interest is calculated based on 300,000 less the 10,000 first, and then calculated to by the interest rate. That's how it's calculated. But your repayment is still the same, but interest is going down, that means you're paying more principal. As you pay more principal, that means you make more advance payments. As you make more advance payments, your principal will go down even at a faster rate. That's how it works. The faster it works, then the more principal you pay, the less interest that you always pay. And the other benefit is that, especially for anybody that has a high income, if you put your money into the just in your current account or in the transaction account, the bad thing is that number one, the interest is not so high. Probably you only earn 2.5% or what. Now, number two, whatever you earn is a taxable income. Whereas in the offset account, it reduces your interest on your home repayments, so it's not a taxable income, but it's reducing your interest. That's number one. The second one, if you put it in the deposit, probably you can get higher income, but it can never beat the interest rate of your loan. Your loan interest rate has got to be higher than your term deposit or your transaction account. So you get the highest interest rate and yet you don't pay tax for it. That's the best thing. So when you have a loan, the best is to put your money in your offsetting account instead of you create another saving account or whatnot. This is not work. It doesn't look good for you.
Thank you.
We might have time for just maybe one more question. Maybe two if they're really burning desires, and then we... Any questions? No? That's it? Okay. Stuart, did you want to say anything?
Well, we might close the evening now. So thank you very much for coming. I hope it was helpful. Make sure before you do leave, you grab one of the CDs with the budget at the back. Or if you don't have a computer, there is hard copies available. And please, if you want to stick around and pick these guys' brains, I'm sure they'll be happy to until it's time for them to go. So thank you, everyone. I hope you had a great night.